Lincoln today. Today's date is August the 1st, 1981, at 6 o'clock p.m. Reverend Harvey Leggett, when did you first arrive in Ypsilanti?
Came here July of 1970.
From where?
From Louisiana, a place you call Slidell, right out from New Orleans.
What was your reason for coming to Ypsilanti?
Primarily to pastor. I had been through here several times, and though I was pastoring in Mississippi as well as in Louisiana, there was a great need for leadership here at St. John Baptist Church, and they asked if I would come and lead them in this membership. So at first I was somewhat hesitant, but after prayer for consideration, we moved here in 1970.
When were you born?
May 14, 1935.
Your parents' name, first and last name?
Well, my father's name was Reverend Elvin Leggett. My mother's name was Mrs. Ethel McGee prior to her marriage. And, of course, they was two from Mississippi. But, however, I was born in Florida. But at an early age, we moved back to Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Your father also was a minister,
right? Yes, he was.
Oh, do you come from a family of ministers?
Well, other than my father, he had another brother that was a minister, and he had three sons that was a minister, but in my particular family, I'm the oldest one.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have six, two brothers and four sisters.
Could you give me their first and last names, too?
We have Nehemiah, he's in Chicago, Illinois, and also Thomas Leggett, who is in Columbia, Mississippi. And, of course, by marriage, my older sister, Emily Bass, is in Columbia, Mississippi. Helen Harry in Gulfport, Mississippi. Armour is in San Francisco, California. And Mamie Dixon is in Oakland, California. Armour Hardin. I was trying to think of her last name there.
Since you've been here the last 11 years, I'd like to ask for you some of your observations about Black life in Ypsilanti. Primarily, when you first arrived here, who were some of the major Black leaders in leadership positions, other than the ministers, and could you name some of the names of those individuals that were in politics and versus those that were in leadership positions that may have been ministers?
But when I first came to Ypsilanti, the thing that probably impressed me most is that I met the former mayor, Mr. Burton, and then I met the present mayor. And then on top of that, I met quite a few of the councilmen, especially on the man that's now the police chief, Mr. Moore, I believe that's what his name. And then there was inspectors and what have you that I was introduced to upon my arrive here. And of course, in general, I guess the late Deacon Tipton introduced me to quite a few of the Black officials that is of Washtenaw County as well as the city of Ypsilanti.
Mm-hmm. What role did the Black church play in Ypsilanti? So just some of your observations. What did you see them doing versus, say, now?
I think, from my observation, I think that we have tried extremely hard, especially the local churches that I'm familiar with, is trying to meet the everyday need of Black children. And actually, in somewhat, I think we feel that we have failed because in our trying, we have found that the drug problem and dope problem and drinking seem like it's not where it should be. But yet I think that's been one of our major concern is to face the issues of today. And when I think in terms of, the problem of today, and of course, being a counselor as well as a minister, there is quite a few problems where that it relates to young people as well as to the adult people. So I think the problem now is that we do have a problem with the generation gap. And this is one of the things that the church have tried to deal primarily with, and that is to bring about unity within a church family as well as in the individual family.
What do you see as some of the problems facing those youth? Why do you think the youth are faced with those kinds of problems or getting involved in those kinds of activities? Is it a need for a new kind of leadership or what? I'm just troubleshooting.
Well, I think, Doctor, that I think there's not enough people that really care. And when I think in terms of care, and I have worked very closely with the school system, I have worked with other ministers, and I have observed quite a few avenues in where there could be progress, simply meaning that it seemed like that everyone is out to help, but it's always a give it. They seem to say, okay, I can provide this provided I get this. And it seemed like that no one is there to say, I can give without expecting something. And I think that we have not given enough of ourselves to the young people. And I speak in terms of not only in the church or in the community, in the school system. I feel that even in our individual home, I think there's a problem there that we have to deal with. And that is that, for an instant, in my case, there I didn't have a say-so. And yet I recognize that we're living in a time now where that the youth have a great deal to put into this life. And yet some of us have the tendency to say, I didn't do it, or I wasn't allowed to do it. So we kind of more or less shut them back. And I think that's a mistake. I think we have to deal with this problem. And when you're talking about dealing with the problem, I'm talking about really caring. And that's the problem. I really don't feel that there is enough people that really cares. I think they are caught up in a job where they have to respond to situation. I think they're caught up in a society where that if they don't respond, the position that they have will look somewhat dim. But I think that you have to care, even in your heart, you have to care.
In your total 11 years now that you've been here in Ypsilanti, what have been some of your observations concerning race relations in Ypsilanti? Is it very conservative, very liberal, or is it sort of fragmented in terms of how blacks and whites relate to one another? Could you discuss some of that, elaborate on some of that?
In my observation, I have dealt primarily with young people when it comes to race relation. And even though we can find ways of playing together, we can find ways of competing against each other, we can find ways of even living with each other as long as it's not a permanent situation. And I see the problem stops. When you talk about relationship, okay, let's take for an instant, at the school, there's black and white on the football, black and white on basketball, black and white on track. And when the track meet is over, then the black go to the black, the white go to the white. And yet I don't see any different here, really, than the state of Louisiana where I came from. It's just a basic, people just do what they're supposed to do. And when they don't have the obligation to respond for any particular person, then they go back being themselves. And I think being themselves, in many ways, we're very separate here.
Wow, that's interesting. What about the education in Ypsilanti? Do you think that that blacks in Ypsilanti have the kinds of educational opportunities available as others in most cities? What I'm trying to drive at is, what are some of the problems with education in the area facing the black community in Ypsilanti? Or are there any?
I feel that the education facilities is excellent here. As far as the facilities that we have for education, I think Ypsilanti High School, the one that I'm primarily involved in, they have excellent teachers. I feel that they have great leadership there. And yet, I feel that even though all of these facilities is there, I feel that our young people are still being shortchanged. Now, I don't know how I'm going to dig out of that. When I say shortchanged, I simply mean that even though the the teachers and the principals and whatnot is there, but I don't think there's enough input in imposing on that kid that he must or she must receive a proper education. And that's when I come back to caring, that word caring, that has to be one of the major issues in the city today. If the teacher, though she be qualified or he be qualified, though they have their degree in any given studies that the student might have, but if they do not apply this to the welfare of that child, then there's a problem. And I feel that this is one of the major problems. It's not because they're not qualified. It's not because they don't have the know-how, but it's simply because, I don't know, some of the kids leave home with an attitude and they go into the classroom and seem like the instructors say something like, well, he's in one of those moves, so I'm going to just let him have his way today. And finally the kid recognized all I have to do is get in a particular mood, and the teacher kind of more or less let me have my way. And I think that's a no-no. I think that teacher should insist that that child get a proper education. I think in that end, I think we're somewhat slack.
Mm-hmm. In the last 11 years, what kinds of advancements have blacks made in the other politics here? Do you see any advancement made on the part of blacks? Like, I'm referring specifically to black participation into the local political structure here, such as black serving council members, having some input, some participation, some decision making in the decision making process that affect the lives of blacks on the South Side, for example. You know,
I have seen a great deal of concern, and there has been quite a bit of input that have been put into the South Side, especially, and this is where we passed in this particular area. And yet, the major criticism also come from among the blacks. You know, I don't know. I think that we are very critical when it comes to our representatives that represent us. And it seems as if, though, when we do get someone, and I will not name this any particular person, but it seems like when we get someone that is doing an adequate job on the South Side or trying to have some input into the South Side, into the black communities, et cetera, et cetera, it seems like then that any opponent that want to run against that person, it's always black running against black. And that's the part that, I don't know, it just don't seem like it's we are unified to the extent whereby the black can get behind a black and say, okay, we're going to push you. It always seemed like when the black is there, we expect too much from the black, and because we don't get everything we expect, then we pick someone else, and then the criticism starts. And I don't know. I think if we could learn how to support our black leaders, our black representative that represent us, I think they can do a more adequate job, regardless of who they are. But I think the main thing that is hurting us as black people here is that we are being very critical one to the other. And that's a problem. I mean, even though there has been a great concern for the South Side, people have shown great concern. People have searched for avenues to help the South Side. And even in their search, even in their concern, there are still a lot of criticisms, and the minds of the people is very much confused. For an instant, I can face the congregation here, and we have somewhere pretty close to 1,000 members here. They're not here at all at the same time, of course, but sometimes, you know, when an issue is in the community, the church is almost, complete split. The only thing I think that we are really together on here in the black community is that most of us just vote for the mayor. You know, when it comes, other than that, we are always trying to figure out who is the best for the...
Why is that? What you mean, are you saying that when the election comes up for Mayor Goodman, everybody votes for him?
Everybody votes, because normally when Mayor Goodman is running, is simply because his opponent is always either white or unknown black to this community, so to speak. Okay. And Mayor Goodman, I don't know his input in this particular area. I don't know. I think that reason why everybody usually vote for him is simply because just about everybody know him. He takes time to make himself known, especially among the churches. And if you ever invite him, he's usually come, unless he's prior committed some other place.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So, what do you think are some of the reasons why people they'll seldom come out to vote for anybody else, other than the mayor?
Right.
Because they don't trust newcomers, or.
Let me take myself for an instant. Maybe that can... back here a few years ago, there was a man that was running for political office here. And I'm one of these, I don't know where you would call me a chauvinist or whatnot, but I don't know. I kind of like male leadership because I just believe in that, the strong arm of a man. And, of course, that goes back into my religious belief and so forth. But there was a particular man that was running for office here, and this lady opposed him in this particular office. And he counted her so lightly, you know. And the thing that moved me was to the extent that the lady would come here, she would talk to us, she would say what she would like to do, she would say what need to be done. And this gentleman felt like he was so in the driver's seat until he ignored us. He ignored the churches and whatnot. And as a result, he lost. He lost. As a matter of fact, I think I even ended up voting for the woman. And that was the one thing that I started out. That was the one thing that I started out saying, I'm not going to vote for no woman. But I don't know. I think that what it is, if a person that is running for political office, if they recognize the people will recognize them. And that's the reason why. See, the time is out now where you get yourself $35 or $40 and go down to your favorite bar, your favorite tavern, and buy everybody a drink on the house and say, hey, vote for me, because that won't do it anymore. It just won't do it. No, I think we have become aware of the fact that it takes more than just a beer to buy a vote. And this is what black people is waking up to.
I'm glad to hear that. When you came here back in 1970, 71, did you notice any blacks that were owners of businesses in Ypsilanti? And if so, could you provide me with their names and the kind of business that they had? Any blacks that owned business here, as you noticed?
And that would take a lot of hesitation.
You had John Barfield here on the way.
Right, with the Barfield, and then there was Russell Construction. He was doing truck service as well as concrete service. And then there was the little small business people that, you know, just did little odds and ends job. But for someone to come up and say that this is a black owned business other than Barfield, I guess it took me some time to become aware of the fact that there was any black business. I think the first black business that I went to was a little store out on Holmes Road. And if my memory serves me right, I think Mr. Hall was
Officer Hall.
Right, I believe that who owned the store. But other than that, I was not too much familiar with any black-owned business.
Oh, wow. What about today? Are you familiar with any owners of black businesses today?
I try to make it my business when the black go into business, that I even stress the fact, even here among the people, that the only way we're going to keep the blacks in the business, we have to patternize, you know, their stores or what have you. And then recently we had a friend of mine that bought a bowling establishment. Mm-hmm. And we're in the process now to get a bowling league just to try to help him stay in business. And I don't know. I don't know whether or not that the blacks and merchants have to pay more for their merchandise or not, but a lot of people challenge me to the fact that if the blacks put up a store, you know, their prices usually run higher and stuff like that. And yet I can find in most places I've gone, they are, you know, compared to like say Stop and Go and the other, you know, 7-Eleven stores and whatnot. But I don't know. I think blacks as a whole, you have a lot of crawfish and a lot of crabs. That's what we used to call them in Louisiana, that every time one started rising, it seemed like we're the one that's going to catch them and say, no, that's too fast.
What is the name of your friend that owns the bowling alley, and what is the name of the bowling alley, and where is it located?
It'd be John Ratcliffe, and he owned the Thunderbird Bowling Lane now on East Michigan Avenue.
Who is he?
He is the president of the NAACP in the Willow Run area.
Willow Run area?
Yes.
How long has he owned this Thunderbird Bowling Lane?
He just bought it this year.
Just bought it this year, right?
Sure. I think it was from the Great Lakes Bowling Establishment. They have several lanes, and he purchased that one there. And I don't know. I think it's one of the greatest things, because we do have quite a few blacks bowling, and as a matter of fact, I rolled a pretty good ball myself.
Fantastic. My goodness. What have been, since 1970 versus today, if you were to look back at yesterday and look at today, what could you say were some of the most significant advances that blacks in Ypsilanti have experienced?
In spite of my criticism, I feel that, well, here, okay, here for an instant, and I'm sure that it happened in churches, on top of churches, I would say that we have at least 50, maybe 75 young people that have been persuaded, you know, to come off of drugs, or stop smoking marijuana, etc. And but the advancement, I think, if we look at it in the proper perspective, I would say that the black man, I think he have finally reached the point of his life that he knows and she knows that an education is a must. You know, it's every job that comes in now is a complicated job, and you have to have some skills, some knowledge in order to take this job. And I think they know this now. And the greatest advancement that I've seen among blacks, especially, we've had so many people right here out of this church, some 30, 40, and 45 and 50 years old, have gone back to school and got a high school diploma, and some have even gone back into college and what have you. And some have worked at the plants. They froze their, priorities down there. They just froze it, and they plan to go back if they want to, but they are trying to make a better life for themselves, and they are doing it through knowledge and through skillful, preparation and so forth. But in education, that would be the most advancement that I've seen among the adults. Mm-hmm. Now, that's have been one of the major things that I have observed as, for an instant, when I came here, there was several people right here in this church couldn't even sign their name. They had come from up south, and they had grown accustomed to making their eggs and so forth. And you know, I'm concerned about that. And we brought some into this church here, sit them down, start off just as you would a child in the first grade, showing how to make an A, and mm-hmm. show them how to sign a name. And as a result, now each one of them is signing their name as they should have been signing all their life. And so these are some of the things. They are concerned about their tomorrows.
Okay. Are you familiar with any black organizations that are doing things in Ypsilanti to promote the progress of the black community? To name some and individuals that you might know. Or even more pointedly, what are many of the black ministers in Ypsilanti doing today, okay, to bring about better economic, social conditions on the part of blacks in Ypsilanti, or even religious things,
Well, there, I know this probably going to bring about some criticism even among the other ministers, black ministers, yeah. But there is not very much that preacher, pastor is going to accomplish as black ministers until we can straighten out our differences in religious belief. And that's a major problem.
That's a major problem?
That is a major problem. Oh, I mean, okay. We put up with each other, but we are very in disagreement with each other. As a result, some ministers just say, hey, I don't want nothing to do with it. You know, I'm going to stay neutral and whatnot. But you see, you got this kind of thing where some churches feel that they have to put down the other church in order for their church to gain the recognition that they would like for it to have. And then there are other churches that would come up and say, if you're a member of that church, you're on your way to hell. And it brings about quite a bit. And so even when we meet together as black ministers, even if we meet together as black preachers, there is this thing, who is right? There's this thing, which one of us pastor the greatest church, which one of us, is really looked upon as one of the big preachers. And yet, all we have to do, I think, to bring about positive thinking, bring about positive in the future, we as black preachers have to first bring ourselves together and to find out what is best for the community, rather than what is best for our individual churches, what is best for our membership. And that's one of the things that we have not yet, we just haven't accomplished that much as black minister. And I think it's because, we have certain people, which I refuse to name, that really feel like, it's sort of like 10 preachers sitting up on a podium or a pulpit,
pedestal,
and one preacher is sitting there with the mind that everybody in this church want to hear me. They don't care nothing about the other nine. They really want to hear me, and I know that. So, you know, you have that tendency to say, I am the big preacher. I'm pastoring the biggest church. I got the most people. My church is this, and you got this kind of a problem. And then you have the people that have a few members that kind of sit in the corner and say, let's see what the big preacher is going to say. And that's when we come together as ministers, I like for every preacher to feel on the same level, and we have not been able to feel that way.
Has that been going on for a while?
That's been going on even before I came here. I mean, even the way I was pastoring back in Louisiana, they have that kind of a classification. A lot of people feel like the membership bring about classification. They feel like the big church is a church.
What kind of impact do you think that's had upon the black community in Ypsilanti?
I think that it have brought about somewhat a challenge for some members. I think that if we paint that type of picture, then the members of these churches will have the tendency to say, hey, look who we are. I'm from this church or I'm from that church. And that's the wrong attitude. Now, I think in a few days, I don't know exactly when, there's a church, of a different denomination. And if we put this on, it's going to be the first ever in Ypsilanti. And that's one of the churches of God in Christ. Mm. And this church, we are in planning now to bring about a complete musical with their choir and our choir, just mingle their voices together, is a start. I mean, now, this should have been instigated by the ministers. But this is being done with people within the church. They're saying, hey, we're tired of you all separating us. You know, if we are worshiping one, I think that's what they're saying to us. If we are worshiping one God, then let us sing together, let us pray together, let us talk together, let us walk together. But yet when we get back in our own individual pulpit, we try to say, hey, but you belongs here. And I think that's kind of a bad, of course, I'm not patting myself on the back, but I've never taught people in my life, not even since I've been here, that Baptist is the only church that you should be in.
We move beyond the church and church leadership and ministry. What about just black leaders in Ypsilanti? The leadership, has it been fragmented because of those problems intrinsic in the community? Has that had an impact on the community unifying, homogenizing itself together to promote some various kinds of social changes? Like, who are the leading leaders today in Ypsilanti, other than Mayor George Goodman, that are seeking to bring about change and enhance community life for black folk? Are there any significant ministers, any significant individuals that are doing something today?
That is a kind of a hard question there. If I tried to pinpoint that particular thing, maybe it would show prejudice. There are some ministers that is very much concerned about, and then there are other. Now, I remember Attorney Mullen, who is now the
Ray Mullen,
right, who is the president of the NAACP here in Ypsilanti area now. And he brought about some ideas that I thought was excellent. He had spoke to me about some ideas, some things that he would like to do as president. And after he told me some of his program, yet I don't, you know, I haven't gone to a meeting since. I have not attended one of the meetings, or have not been informed. And I'm a kind of a year, you know, I just pay each year. And I kind of wait to see what the leadership is going to do. Then you got people that the church folks is somewhat reluctant to even trust politicians. Mm. We feel, for instance, so many times people come up in the church, you know, just for election time, and they will give you that, I just want you to know, and, you know, to get up on the podium and they say, I want to read my favorite verse, you know, and they would go into this religious, you know, and they would go like, the Lord is my shepherd, and that means so much to me, you know, naturally. So they want to leave an image that, hey, I'm a Christian, And I want you all to know that if y'all help me get in, I'll come back at other time. And you never see him anymore. You know, I mean, that's, to me, that's false representation. Even if it's no more than just to come back and say, I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Some don't even think enough is to just sit down and write. Had one man to do that. And that's why I say, maybe I'm putting George Goodman on a pinnacle, the pedestal, but he just, if he say he's going to come back and you know, well, he does it. He'll come back through here and just say, maybe he, each time he come, I would recognize him, but sometimes he just wave his hands. I said, no, you have a mayor. I want you to, you know, and he'd get up and he'll thank the people. And that's why I say, as long as, you know, we get that kind of representation where that people will at least keep, that wasn't a big thing to him, but it was a big thing to the people here in this church. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing to me. Even as a preacher, I have that kind of a pride that if I can stand up and talk to the mayor of the city, I don't know, maybe it bothers no one else, but I feel a certain sense of pride. If I stand up there with the chief of police, you know, or the police department, if I stand up there and start talking to him and people start to pass, and I don't know, I have that sense of pride. Hey, look, this is the chief of police. But when they fail to recognize us,
yes,
then there's a little tension that comes in there. So when they come in and say, hey, I'm going to be by there, son, I said, good, but you won't say nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of thing that we get into. But now, for as black leaders, that's really trying. I just don't see any one individual. There are several that is just, you know, kind of more or less, I think, waiting on someone to say, let's go. And I don't know who that person is. I don't know that person that will get up today and be a Martin Luther King, be a Charles Edwards, or someone like that, would get up and say, let's go. And the people will fall behind. I don't see that leadership in Ypsilanti. Maybe it's here, but I haven't found it yet.
You haven't found it?
No.
Oh, well, that's interesting, to say the least. So you're saying, you're saying that you don't see any major form of leadership in the black community.
Today. I just don't see it.
What do you see as some possible viable alternatives to resolve or help ameliorate the situation? Or improve the condition, should I say.
The one thing, get a black representative that is representing the South Side. Let him get to know the people. And the only way you're going to do that, you're going to have to go to them. They're not going to come to you. And let that black representative come through these churches where I would say 80% of the people are on Sunday. Maybe he could come here one Sunday. I would give him the chance to let the people know what some of the idea. Give us some leadership. Let us know. Tell us how we can help. Get us involved. And the only way you're going to get a community out of a chaos is they have to get involved themselves. And it's impossible to get involved when we don't know where to go. No one have come here this year and I got a letter now that has to do something with some kind of economic situation where that they're asking the church to give us a hand because if you all don't give us a hand on that, the revenue is going to be cut off next year. You know, that's the only kind of, you know, that you get what I'm saying. The only way they use us is when that it's going to take some money away or something like that. And when you said take the money away, taking it from who? Taking it out of his pocket or her pocket or whatnot. But I'm saying, if that avenue, then tell us how we can build this program. No, okay, for an instant right now, we have a bus service that we pick up a whole lot of kids all over the city of Ypsilanti and in the township. And we bring them to this church every day. And there's a concern that furnish the luncheon here. Okay, now, we don't get nothing. The church don't get nothing. We have, just like our gas bill come out this month, $600 just for gas this month for hauling these kids back and forth. We don't ask for nothing. If we feel that we have helped the kid, even though these people are furnishing the food, but we would like to think that the recreation and this religious guide that we have given them across the summer, we have a couple more weeks, that we have contributed something.
Yeah.
not that, you know, I mean, what I'm saying, even though it's costing us, but we want to have a good feeling about this thing that we have, but we need one person. It don't have to be a whole lot of them, that each one of us, as citizen of the city of Ypsilanti, that can look at it and say, okay, where do we go? Even if it's you, we said, Dr. Ingram, where do we go from here? You know, you said, okay, I do that. Get you some strong arms, you know, to hold you up and stuff like that. And you know, add a couple of clergymen in there, you know, clergy in there, and let the clergy keep the other clergy. And so that we'll be fighting for the same cause. And right now, what cause are we fighting for? I don't know.
Well, Reverend Leggett, I'd like to thank you for providing me with this opportunity. No, I don't have to ask you. Tell me something about your background training, school training. I'm getting a thing on all the ministers, too.
All right. Okay. Well, I finished high school in the state of Mississippi at a school you call the Marion High School. However, it wasn't accredited school, and I ended up going back to high school in Colorado Springs, Colorado, at the El Paso High School, where I
graduated.
That was in 19. I went back after I went into service. Oh. That was in 1954.
Okay.
And after that, I had a tour in the Army, and I stayed there until 1958. And I got out of the Army in 1958, and that's where I attended Denver University there. And I left there in 1960. I had gone there 3.5 years. After leaving there, I went back to the South, and I had my degree there from Jackson State in Jackson, Mississippi. So my further studies, I went to the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Gulfport, Mississippi, there at the Southern there, and there I have a Bachelor of Theology there. But I don't know, I think every opportunity that I get to try to further my education, I try to take it. I have taken courses here at Detroit Bible College since I've been here. I've also had courses in drug abuse and drug uses at Michigan University here in Ann Arbor.
Okay. It's been a general policy of I'm going to have this tape transcribed and typed out. And once it's typed out, you'll receive a copy of it in the mail and it'll allow you an opportunity to read the document, to make deletions or additions.
Thank you.
To what you might have, so that it would more reflect, you know, what our conversation was all about today. I'd like to thank you.
My pleasure.